Hi, I'm Mark Benijevic. Welcome to Governance Bites. Today, it's my pleasure to spend time with Dennis Murray. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Hi. So Dennis, like me, qualified as a lawyer, but never actually worked in that space. Instead, spends a lot of time for a company called CCH writing documents for lawyers, writing books, training books and things for lawyers. And then later, actually consulted to a company called LexisNexis, where he wrote material around governance and those sorts of areas as well, and is now managing director of a company called Decreed. So very heavily in the governance space. So thank you very much for your time, Dennis.
Pleasure. Thank you.
So I want to start with a broad question. What is governance?
Okay. Well, in the broadest sense, governance is the process of being responsible for managing the operations of an entity. So that entity could be a private sector company, it could be a government sector company, it could be a not-for-profit.
Okay. Yeah.
And then as you take on board this responsibility, I suppose, to run it, you have to make sure that you've got a defined purpose around what it is that you're trying to achieve for the organisation that you have governance responsibilities for. So having that as a collective purpose around where you want that organisation to go, and then sitting in beneath that, the role of the director as an individual is also to be able to participate in that process. So there's two very distinct different roles for governance. One's a collective purpose, the other one's the individual responsibilities of the directors.
Can you talk a little bit about that distinction between the collective purpose and the individual responsibilities?
Yeah, I think boards need to understand where it is as an organisation how they want to operate, what they want to achieve, so therefore their goals, probably the things like values, mission statement. So values being what do you all share in terms of how you want to go about this thing that you're all acting in concert to achieve, and then your mission statement, which would be basically what are we going to do as a team to get there. And then when you come down to the individual, it's all about the individual understanding what their individual responsibilities are as part of that team. Now, some of that, it can be quite interesting because you can have differing opinions, but then what you do is that through open communication, you work out where everybody sits within the board. Those board members having in the back of their mind, my role is, as a director, to work in the best interests of the organisation that I'm acting in a governing role to. Mm-hmm. So once you get that clear, and then your personal understanding about how that may work may not always coincide with whoever else sits on the board.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So then I think that a general rule really for individual directors is to be true to themselves, understanding their role, understanding their duties and their responsibilities, and actually being brave enough to voice those to the team, and then having confidence in that team that they will work through whatever differences may arise, and then they come to a resolution. And then that resolution needs to be captured.
Right, and that's the value of having a disparate group of people with different skills and different backgrounds on a board, because they bring different perspectives. Mm. And then having those different perspectives, they might come with their own biases and so forth, and through that open and respectful discussion, you realise maybe where your gaps are and what you've missed, and together you come up with the best best way forward for the business or for the entity.
Yeah, I'd say generally you come up with in most cases, you come up with the best resolution for the business. But it's also being open to understanding that actually where you need to get to is a consensus agreement. And so therefore the communication that you have. And then a board might also go, well, actually that consensus was wrong. So you do need to pivot occasionally as a board because the consensus agreement's taking you somewhere where you don't actually want to go. And be bold enough to step that back. So there's always a role for the individual director to say, even after a resolution, look, I think there's an issue here, we need to discuss this again, and we need to see whether or not we change that. But then also being respectful about what that consensus is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
and then
right.
that's how you get, really generally speaking, to very good outcomes.
Okay. So what determines the governance framework for an organisation? What is it that kind of sets the rules?
Oh, yeah, really interesting. Well, from a legal perspective, the organisation rules will be set by the jurisdiction in which that organisation...
So the local laws of the domicile of the organisation.
Yeah, wherever that may be. So, you know, in New Zealand here, it'll be obviously New Zealand legislation, wherever it'll be, whatever the jurisdiction of the country is.
Yes.
And you need to be familiar with those rules because they do change from jurisdiction
yes.
to jurisdiction, and they'll have different requirements. So understanding those rules will give you the confidence to kind of relax in your role. So mm-hmm. once you understand it,
yes.
then you do have that confidence. Then at another level altogether, just from a, and I'm talking in very broad terms here, understanding the different roles of what makes up an organisation. So for example, for a private company, like, you know, primarily the sort of companies that I've worked for, although I have worked in some state sector areas, but primarily it would be shareholders.
Yes.
So the shareholders are the owners.
Yes.
And then they are a completely separate group to the directors. So the directors basically get their starting orders from the shareholders. They get
yes.
elected onto the board, and then the directors have to act in the best interests of the company.
Right.
Now, as to what might be in the best interests, sometimes can be impacted by the law.
Right.
And then you have another set. So you have the other set, which is the role of the executive. So it goes shareholders elect the directors delegate powers.
Delegating down to the executive.
To the executive.
Right.
And there is another one, another responsibility that is sometimes forgotten. And this is one that applies equally, I believe, to state sector or not-for-profits as it does to private entities that are, you know, have a purpose of making a profit. And that is the world at large.
Yes.
So there is, you can't really discharge your responsibilities unless you've always got it clear in your mind, actually, I have a greater duty here as well. I can't just stick narrowly to this thing. And I'd liken it to, you know, you're crossing a road and you got to look left, you got to look right, you got to look left again, and so on, just to make sure that it's safe. A director, to be safe, really needs to look both ways. They need to look to the interests of the companies, the company shareholders and the company itself, and they also need to look to the public at large.
Right.
Are they actually going to cause great harm?
Because no entity operates in a vacuum.
No.
It's all part of society, so
it
there's an important role to play.
Yeah.
And I think different jurisdictions have legislated in that way, in that direction, to varying degrees, haven't they? Some have made that far more explicit than others.
Yeah.
And that's where some of the legal differences that you mentioned before can come about. So I think fundamentally the process of governance, the thing that you do as a director and the way you do it is really fairly similar the world round, but as you say, the jurisdictions have slight differences in their laws about what your obligations are. And one good example of that would be, you know, in my industry, certain industries have to have a license, certain entities have to have a license to operate.
Yes.
And that's a very legal requirement, and the directors have to be aware of that legal requirement so that they can discharge those duties
yeah.
as part of their obligations.
Absolutely.
So can we take a little bit more into this concept of delegations? Because as you said before, you know, the directors are responsible and representing really the shareholders or the members for a not-for-profit organisation, and they're looking to act in the best interest of the entity as owned by the shareholders or as collectively kind of owned by the members, if you can think of it that way, for a not-for-profit. So the directors have this ultimate responsibility that everything is happening the right way, but they can't do it all themselves.
No.
So they delegate some of the, or a lot of the actual day-to-day operations and a lot of the other work to the CEO, the executive team. Can you explain a little bit about how that delegation process works and
yes,
how it's formalised?
Yeah, so the delegation process will be done by resolution. So there will be a decision made by the directors, and there'll be limits on delegations. So for example, you might say to the CEO, well, CEO, you've got responsibility for all executive functions in this way and the people underneath you reporting to you, but you cannot, I mean, for one of a better example, you know, you cannot enter into a commitment greater than $5 million or something like that.
Right.
So it's a simple, you know, sort of pitch on it. If it's over that, then it's got to go back to the board.
The other approval, right?
Yeah. The other one is to be very careful about setting your annual budget, because the annual budget is what is approved by the board, and that's what the executive team is supposed to work to.
Right.
The executive, of course, will be very involved in setting that budget.
Yes.
And they will take it to the board often, and then the board will approve it, and then the delegations go down. Now, we then come to a variation from the budget. Yeah, and if it's outside a delegated authority, you've got to go back to the board.
Right, right. So ultimately the board has the ultimate responsibility, and everything that happens in the organisation has some form of delegation from the board of directors. And if it steps outside that delegation, it has to come back to the board for approval. It's ultimately that simple, right? So, and the sorts of documents you will have to determine those delegations will include the job descriptions and the contracts with those staff, like your CEO, and then you'll have a delegations framework or a delegations policy that says things like, this is your maximum limit of what you can sign off. And if it's outside the budget that's approved, then this is the sort of thing that has to come back to the board.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's very important to have a good understanding of what those are, because, you know, I do know a number of cases where executives have not been aware of the limits on their authority. And, you know, in a jurisdiction like New Zealand, I can't really talk for any others, but in a jurisdiction like New Zealand, you can get into grave difficulties, legal difficulties, and basically, you end up in prison if you don't act the right way. So your duties and responsibilities need to be taken very, very carefully. The other thing is that there is software out there that is very simple to run that gives everybody in the chain a very clear understanding of what it is that they do. So, not only can the directors feed into this type of software, but it can feed back, and then you can see in an instant as a board or as an individual director on a board what's going on, so you have visibility. So I think that is very important. And probably just on that point, I mean, the other one that I'd say would be to have a way of managing governance that makes it just straightforward and stress-free. There are PACs out there that, or not PACs, there's platforms and solutions out there. I mean, I know a couple, but
yeah, name them.
Oh, okay. Well, the one that we primarily use here is a company called BoardPro, which is a very easy to use, intuitive, fast and efficient way of managing governance. So you'll get everything from everything that you need to capture, and you know what the minutes are, what you're going to put on the agenda, who's provided the reports, to actually drive the decision making for the board. So it can actually happen very succinctly, very quickly, and then it's all captured online. And then whoever is feeding in, even during a board meeting, notes are taken, loaded up, and by the time you've finished your board, it's pretty much all there.
And stuff are all there.
Yeah.
Right. So you showed me that software earlier, and so you're ultimately building your agenda in BoardPro. We are looking for sponsors, by the way, so feel free, BoardPro, to throw us some coin. otherwise, Diligent, a competitor, they can do the same. So you essentially build your agenda up in the software. You throw your board papers into the agenda items, and then you can very simply push a button and create your board pack.
Yeah.
Get that out to your directors a couple of weeks in advance so they can read all of the information in advance, digest it, ask questions of the chair and so forth, get further information back. The chair can go to the CEO for clarification. It can then feed information back to the directors, so the directors can go to the board meeting armed and knowledgeable and in a position to make a good decision.
And carry out their duties and responsibilities in a legal way so that they're not exposing themselves to personal liability.
Absolutely.
So in New Zealand here, that's a very big thing. I imagine it's a big thing offshore. And I think if you follow that kind of practice, what it does is it takes the stress out, it makes the process really fast, but it also gives you visibility on where you're at any one time.
Yes.
So you can go back to your board documents and you can see it very clearly.
It's got the history and stuff as all there as well.
Yeah.
Right.
And then then off to the side you can have your software, and I'll give a shout out to Decree, because this is what we do.
Decree, by the way, is a tech platform, which is why Dennis is so strong in this technology area.
So what that does is it basically asks the question, in a international standards organization sort of way, do you know what your responsibilities are? If you don't know what your responsibilities are, hey, you better know them, because there's liability attached to not knowing them. And then once you get that, what the board wants to know is that it has a capable team that understands what is required. So in a large organization like the Taekwondo Federation, is that the right word?
Yeah.
So that'll have a number of member associations.
Yes, it's a federation.
And so then it would be, the federation setting whatever the rules or policies for the members, and then the federation to be confident that the members understood what is being asked of them to be a part of that federation.
Right.
So that can be fed up very simply. And where there is a gap, so, you know, the ISO thing is identifying the gaps and then filling the gaps and making sure that people actually get that knowledge. The beauty for the people running, say, a federation like the Taekwondo one, would be that you can see that in a glance.
Yes.
So this is all about making life easy.
Builds it all back up and says, these are the gaps in knowledge of your team.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as Dennis has said, you know, his understandings around the New Zealand framework, the ISO, of course, is the International Standards Organization. So this is a global framework for standards for how to run companies.
Yes, absolutely it is.
And organizations. Great. Yeah, okay, cool. Thank you very much. So, I know that you've found yourself in the past on a board that doesn't really understand its role. And as you've mentioned before, as a director, you have significant liability. So if you find yourself on a board of directors where the board as a collective doesn't really understand how it's supposed to do its job, you can find yourself in a lot of trouble. So how did you, or how could you deal with that situation?
Yeah. Well, I think that the number one requirement is open, honest communication. It is best, of course, to have that communication from a base of knowledge, understanding, you know, what the organisation is trying to achieve. So you've already agreed on that. And then the other one is, are you operating off a common set of values?
Yes.
So values drive the way in which you make decisions, not necessarily the decisions themselves. And then when you have, you will have, well, no, I'm going to phrase that differently. One would hope that you would have, on a diverse board, different opinions about how to proceed.
Yes.
Because then that's very healthy.
Yes.
And then the question is, how do you resolve those differences and then resolve them in the technical sense by capturing them? So what I always recommend is that open, honest communication from a sense of confidence in what you know that you are required to do. In the sense of in the definition, say, of a director in a New Zealand company, the New Zealand director is required to act in the best interests of the company.
Yes.
Not of the shareholders, not of themselves.
Yes.
So that's a very clear distinction. The other one is that where you have the advisors to a board, you need to be very careful about how that is managed. So an advisory board is not a board.
No.
Consultants to a board is not a board. The power lies with the board. What the board needs to do is that they need to be able to see the advice. Now, a board may not always take on advice because they may have a difference of opinion to it. Then again, it's a matter of working through that in a way that is respectful of the legal advice or whatever sort of advice you've received, and unpack it and then see whether it aligns with where you want to go.
Right.
So I think if you get these sort of conflicts, open communication, confidence in what you're wanting to do, working together in concert with values to ultimately meet the purpose of the entity.
Organization. Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, we haven't talked about, and we won't get into in this conversation, that whole setting the direction and having a strategy and moving forwards. And then what we're talking about here is making sure that we're aligning the opinions for how to deliver on that strategy. It is very important to have a strategy.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
You're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So as a director, you've been a director on a number of companies over a number of years. What's the best advice you've been given?
Not to concede your power. So I think it is important. So you can be sitting on a board and there will be differing opinions. You may be in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think it is still healthy and important that somebody who is in the minority to still voice their opinion in the face of a majority. Now, then, as the board moves forward and comes to a resolution, and maybe a resolution to, you know, that you don't agree with,
yes,
be respectful
of the decision. Right.
Yeah. And then when you work through things in that way with respect, you know, you can have good outcomes. Also, I think that there is a case, you know, and again, this comes back to the advice, you know, don't concede the power. So if you have a continuing belief that you may, in fact, have an opinion that's worthy of note, you can raise it again.
Yes.
You know, there is a limit on that, of course, but I would say that, you know, you get to a position where you have a healthy discourse.
Yes.
And then move forward.
Yeah, every opinion is important because that one individual may have thought of something that no one else has thought of. It brings to mind that the old film 12 Angry Men, where you've got the one juror who keeps relaying this opinion and eventually turns the tide of the entire decision of the jury.
Try to bring in all the information that you need in order to make a decision that's one, lawful, and two, in alignment
with the organisation's purpose. Yes. Yeah, which comes back to what we were talking about before, about the importance of having board papers and having the information well in advance so that the directors can understand the issues, ask questions and things before they're asked to make a decision on them.
Yeah,
well in advance, so they have time to digest it.
Yeah.
Right.
I would generally say you need your board papers at least a week in advance.
Right.
I mean, anything shorter than that, you don't really have a full opportunity to go through the issues.
Absolutely, and as a not-for-profit, possibly slightly longer, because not-for-profits will have day jobs and things that have got to work these things around.
Well, yes, and also larger organisations like a federation.
Where the issues can be more complex.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Well, a final question for you then. With your experience, your wealth of experience, what advice would you give to a new director?
I would say understand your duties and responsibilities, because, you know, your mana, your power, lies within you as an individual. And it just makes things very stressful to be operating from a perspective of ignorance. So, you know, understand the rules of the jurisdiction that you operate under, and then, you know, and so that's a technical thing. You kind of just got to put in the hard yards on that. And then the other one would also to understand the history of the organisation that you're a director of, because there's a huge amount of, you know, wealth of value in that as well.
Yes.
And then when you bring the two together, it's really understanding how they connect. One can't really operate without the other.
Yes.
So my advice would be, you know, if you don't know the history of the organisation, become familiar with it. If you don't know the rules of the jurisdiction, become familiar with those, and then act out of your own power in order to be as positive and effective as possible for the organisation.
Right. And I wonder whether we could add to that understanding your role as a director. So, you know, understanding the rules of the jurisdiction is part of it, but you also have to understand what your job is as a director.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And actually, one other thing is I'd say that hierarchy that I was mentioning before about really the directors, although appointed by the shareholders, they're really sitting at the top of the tree, and they're the ones who do delegate the responsibilities. So, you know, just be respectful of your own power there, but don't concede it in the sense of it flipping around. And this does happen in organisations from time to time, where, you know, there might be a single really strong shareholder or a single really strong executive. It might be whoever, it could be CEO often, because they're a certain sort of personality. But understand your power and actually deliver on your responsibilities.
Right, you can't hand over your obligations to another party, the CEO, for example, or the executive team, or the shareholders or the members. You can't hand it over to a strong voice and neglect your job.
Yeah.
Do your job.
Yeah, and nor should a director being seeking consensus. You know, you are looking for a resolution, but you're not necessarily looking for a decision by committee.
Right.
So and there is a distinction between the two. And I think if, you know, you mind, so I'd say to a young director starting out, just be aware of these things and how you want to act for the organisation.
So, as you've suggested before, through that communication, that discussion, you end up with a resolution, a decision that may be by majority, not unanimous.
Yeah.
And you may be in the minority disagreeing with the decision. Well, that is the decision you have collectively made as a board.
Yeah.
Get on with it. And as you've said earlier, you may have to raise an issue again later if it arises. You may have to revisit a decision if information changes.
Yeah.
But be part of the team.
Be part of the team. And that's one thing would be that where you're aware of potential harm because of a breach by board or by an individual or a number of individual directors against the jurisdiction, I think that would be one instance where you would raise it again. Because what you're doing is you're trying to protect your team being the board.
Yes.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you're trying to get yourself out of prison. So if anything comes up that is in a breach of your obligations, of course, you have to raise that. You really have to step down on that.
Yeah, and you probably, in some instances, would want to have your decision, your own opinion on that resolution noted if it's an exception, particularly if you feel that it's going to breach local laws.
Right.
But yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Dennis. It's been a great conversation.
Oh, no, thank you. Very interesting.
I look forward to catching up with you again soon and seeing you next episode.
Cool.